The fur trade is a huge part of Northwest history. One of the first white settlements in the Northwest, Astoria, Oregon, was created around the fur trade. But did you know that fur is still a big industry here? Fur farms are scattered throughout Washington. Leonard Garfield is the executive director of MOHI at Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. He told Marcy Silman that even though the fur industry is still thriving here, there's a good reason you don't see Seattleites in fur coats on Fifth Avenue.
We don't hear about it so much anymore because, let's face it, fur is really not politically correct, and Seattle is, if nothing else, politically correct. So the presence of fur is not as visible, but economically it's very much present.
At what point was fur the accessory that everybody had to have here?
You know, I think in terms of 20th century history, it really began in the 1920s. Fur had become a luxury item, but it was one of those items that even a middle-class person could save up and over time afford that one fur coat that would distinguish them as someone who had essentially arrived. And it remained a luxury item and a fashionable item really until the 1980s. I think that's when issues of ethics, of animal cruelty, of the economics and the environmental impacts of the fur industry really rose their heads in our consciousness. And the fur became less of a fashion statement and a little bit more of a political statement.
Do you remember when the fur stores and the fur salons were around?
Absolutely. When I came to Seattle back in the early 1980s, the fur salons and fur showrooms downtown were a big deal. You know, it was kind of an interesting phenomenon because Seattleites themselves were not necessarily the big audience for those retail enterprises. They were attracting buyers from across the country, climates that were a little bit colder and maybe, if I can say it, a little bit more fashionable than Seattle was in the 1980s.
And all of them are gone? All those first ones?
You know, I'm not going to say they're all gone, but I'm going to say they're all underground at this point in the sense that they don't have the big visible prominence on the street front that they once did.
I'm talking with the director of Seattle's Museum of History and Industry, Leonard Garfield. So I'm sure that long before there was a downtown Seattle, there was a Pacific Northwest fur trade, right?
Of course. And it began with the Hudson's Bay Company. It was really our introduction to international commerce. That's one of the principal ways this region became settled and explored were by these great fur trappers.
I always think of this as a timber region. Are you saying fur was equally prominent?
Well, fur predated timber. Fur was trapped. There was a big market for fur in Europe, and British trappers and American trappers, John Jacob Astor, maybe that's a name you recognize.
Yes.
Hudson's Bay Company, another name we know well, really helped pioneer exploration of the Northwest.
So we became known initially in that late 19th, early 20th century as a fur capital?
Well, that's the trapping era began as early as the 1790s and went into the early 19th century. It was really in the 20th century that we became known as a fur retailing empire because now we were producing and selling not just the pelts but the actual fashion themselves.
Fur coats, fur accessories.
Coats, fur hats, fur mufflers, fur scarves. You really could go into a Seattle fur salon and buy any article of clothing executed in beautiful fur.
So fur put us on this international stage along with some other industries. What kind of lasting impact has that had on us here?
Well, I think it's really interesting because Seattle is a place that began to trade with the rest of the world before it even traded with the United States. And so our connection to Alaska, which, you know, was not part of the United States, to Canada, to Japan, all of it revolved around fur at one point. It really was our entree into an international global economy. In that sense, fur really has laid the groundwork for what became a very international city in recent years.
That's fascinating. So we weren't the jet city, we were the furry city.
Something like that.
Okay. I have seen fur in stores, but where are all these fur producing, you know, who's making the fur coats and where are they?
Well, you know, fur is both trapped and it's raised. And when you raise fur, it's called fur farming. And there are mink farms throughout Washington State. We're the seventh largest mink producer in the country. It's then taken to furriers who actually make the garments. A lot of it is handled in auctions, in really behind the scenes trade.
But in this region?
Yes, in this region. And in fact, the world's largest fur auction actually happens right here in the Seattle region in Renton. It's an outgrowth of one of our oldest fur companies called the Seattle Fur Exchange, which was founded back in the early 20th century, sort of an outgrowth of the gold rush.
I have never heard of the Seattle Fur Exchange. That's exciting. Well, we're not wearing this fur, so where's it going?
Well, a lot of it ended up at Goodwill, or it ended up in your attic. I don't know if your mother was a woman who maybe enjoyed a fur coat. She might still, or her family might still have a fur coat in the attics and closets. But much of the big fur market now on a retail level is actually in Asia. It's in Russia. It's not really so much in the United States anymore.
Why is fur so popular there?
Well, let's think of those countries, particularly China, have such an exploding middle class and even an upper middle class, a well-to-do class. And fur remains universally a status symbol, a luxury item. And in countries where luxury was so rare and so forbidden for so many for so long, fur has become the item to have. And much of that comes here from the United States.
And what kind of fur is it these days?
You know, it varies, but mink is still the baseline fur that women and consumers want. And that's what's the largest segment of the market.
Fur is still a status symbol in Asia and Russia, as you mentioned. But in the United States, not so much. In Europe, really a lot of people protesting fur. I understand even some Japanese have started to protest the idea of fur. So what kind of future do you envision for this sort of invisible industry of the Northwest?
Well, you know, the people in the fur industry say that the future actually is rosy, but it does lie primarily in those exploding economies of Asia. China is the golden egg in the basket of the fur industry, and that probably will play out over many years. I don't think that will go away anytime soon.
Can you ever imagine a time where fur decks the people walking down Fifth Avenue in Seattle again?
Well, you know, one thing we learn in history, Marcy, is that it does tend to repeat itself, and you also never say never. So while it's hard to imagine fur coming back in a big way, who knows? Maybe 10 years, 20 years from now, we'll be sitting here and saying, gee, look at all these fur coats. I wonder when that first ever appeared in Seattle.
Leonard Garfield, executive director of Seattle's Museum of History and Industry, he told Marcy Silman about Seattle's thriving fur trade. It's The Record on KUOW.